had several of the guys on the football team that were in my youth group, and they came to me and said, hey, you know, we'd like to have a Bible study with the football guys, you know, could you talk to Coach about it? So I went out there, and we had a good relationship with the local high school there and with the coach, and so I went up to him and said, hey, you know, Matt, and you know, all these other guys, and Justin, and so forth and so on. Matt was the quarterback. And I said, they would like to do a Bible study, you know, and just volunteer for the team, maybe Thursday after school or something like that, where if the guys want to come to, they can come to, you know, just kind of the day before game day thing. And the head football coach said, let me think about it. And I thought, well, this isn't going anywhere. And so I came back to him, I guess it was the next day, maybe in a couple days later, went up to him and said, hey, coach, you know, just wanted to see where that was at, you know, and stuff like that. And he was used to seeing me out there at practice, and we would bring him Gatorade to the guys and stuff like that. And so he came to me and said, I'll tell you what. He said, here's the deal. Now, he'd been coaching at this high school for 25 years, okay? He looked at me and he said, here's the deal. He said, on Fridays, right before kickoff, he said, you know, we said, we go out and do all of our stretching and everything else. We come back inside. I give the guys their final instruction. Then we go back outside and we do the coin toss. And I said, yeah. He said, here's the deal. He said, why don't you talk to the guys right before they go out for kickoff? And I was in shock. And I said, well, coach, I said, we may run into a little bit of problem because we can't make the guys be there. It can't be, you know, anything against them if they don't want to be there, so forth and so on. So he said, that's fine. I'll just let them know. This doesn't have anything to do with playing time. This has to do with whatever you want it to be. If you want to walk outside, you can walk outside. But no one walked outside. You know, no one walked outside. Everybody stayed because here's what they knew. They're about to go out there and really get in the middle of a fierce game. And I think some of them even thought, you know, because there was a couple of them that told me, hey, man, I'm an atheist. I'm really not into all this stuff. But what could it hurt? You know, I mean, that was their philosophy was, is if there is a God, maybe he'll keep me from getting hurt. All right. If not, then you know, what do I have to lose? Well, one of the young men that was there every single Friday, and I watched him from 7th grade till about 10th or 11th grade. I left there and went to another place. It's Darren McFadden. And I remember watching him in 7th grade. I've got all these videotapes of him, man. I wish I could say I could be rich off of him, but I won't be. But I got all these videotapes of when I would stay on the sideline and videotape all their games. We'd show all these video highlights and stuff like that. And watch Darren all that time. And, you know, you're standing next to this person, and you know they're good where they are, right? But everybody always has that local guy that everybody thinks is the next great star, right? And then you find out when they go to D1, they're good, but they're not great, you know? They're playing some ball, but they're not great. And I always remember watching Darren running up and down the sidelines, you know, and running up and down the field and stuff like that. He was a man among boys, you know? But you thought, well, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, it's a small place, you know, what really good can kind of come out of here. And you look back at that now, you know, as I was watching the LSU game on Friday, and I'm watching this young man running up and down the field, and I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I addressed probably the number one pick in the draft, probably the Heisman Trophy winner for this year. He's the only guy since Herschel Walker to get 1,000 yards back to back to back. It's amazing, you know. But the one thing about all those games is, as much as I want to cheer Darren on or a person on, your team, you want to win the game, right? I mean, you may know someone personally on a team, and you want them to do well, but if you're really behind the team, it's not enough to say, wow, they ran for 206 yards if they always lose. You want to be a part of that winning team. And that's kind of how we've set up life in some weird ways, is how we keep score determines a lot of things. I want you to look at Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. Then someone called from the crowd, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." Jesus replied, "Friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that?" Then he said, "Beware, don't be greedy for what you don't have. Real life is not measured by how much we own." And he gave an illustration. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. In fact, his barns were full to overflowing, so he said, "I know, I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store everything. And I'll sit back and say to myself, 'My friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get it all?' Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. I don't remember which person it was that passed away. I thought it was Rockefeller, that when he passed away, that his attorney came out and they were asking him questions. It was one of the wealthiest guys who's ever lived. I'm just positive it was Rockefeller. That the attorney came out and they were asking him questions, and one of the reporters raised their hand, and he called on him and said, "How much did he leave?" And the attorney looked down and looked up and he said, "He left all of it." He left all of it. It was a great statement in a perfect moment. And I don't know if the guy had that prepared or if it just came to him split second. But instead of divulging whether it was $4.4 billion or whatever that it might be, he left all of it. He left everything behind. And when we talk about the heart of the matter, Jesus really cuts through this guy's statement. And the guy's trying to, it almost sounds like, say something fair, like, "Hey, my brother won't even share." And Jesus doesn't even go there. Doesn't even give the lecture of, "Well, yeah, you're right. The brother ought to do something. He ought to be a good guy. Why isn't he a good guy? You don't have a good brother." You know, that's what the problem is here. And really, you know, support his argument. Instead, he just glosses over it and says, "Friend, this is not what life's about." And he really exposes the heart of that person. And while it may have sounded like he was saying, "Hey, you know, give me half," Jesus knew something that the listener did not know, and what we didn't know, he knew that heart. And he knew what the heart was really trying to do and what he was really trying to say. I don't know about you, but when I was younger, in our neighborhood, we had tons of kids, and so we got to play all these games together. And so we would have, you know, during the fall, we would have all these different football teams. And then during the summer, we had wiffle ball, and so we would play wiffle ball together. And we would have a league within our neighborhood. And it was really cool the way that we as kids would set it all up and play against each other. And we loved playing football. But occasionally we would get to the point where we were like, "Oh, that's okay." But then we would play this game, and I don't know what you called it. We called it Kill the Man. Did you all ever play Kill the Man or some derivative of it, okay? You know, where you just throw the ball up in the air. Whoever gets it runs wherever they want to run to. There is no goal here. And then everybody else chases him and tries to tackle him, and we would call it dogpiling on them, okay? That's what we would call it, all right? It may sound a little crude, but that's what we called it. And we all gang up on them, and we would tackle. And after about 10 minutes of that, we got sick of it. Because you know why? There's no score. There's no goal. And so then we would go back to playing real football because we wanted a score. It had to have been a man that came up with the little slogan, you know, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Have you ever seen that bumper sticker or seen that slogan? And I'm just confident that some woman, probably the wife of this man, came up with the other one that was the rebuttal. "He who dies with the most toys still dies." Have you ever seen that one? It had to have been a woman because a guy came up with the first one. I mean, you know, hey, we're all about toys, you know, all right? Difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. You ever heard that before? Okay, you women, you know this, all right? Okay, it changes, you know. Then it's Xbox, and then all of a sudden it goes to like brand new 4x4 truck. I mean, that's how we go from here to here, all right? It's the difference between men and boys, price of their toys. There's no doubt in my mind that a man came up with that. You know, "He who dies with the most toy wins." And then a lady rebutted and said, "Who dies with the most toy still dies." Jesus got to the heart of the matter. I want to give you a couple of GPS things this morning. Good practical stuff is the way that I define GPS. I know that all the GPS things, it seems like, are on sale right now for global positioning, so you know exactly where you are, so that when you get lost, you'll say, "Yep, there I am on the screen," and trying to figure out how to weave my way through. How we keep score defines our success. Now really think about that. How we keep score, how you keep score really defines your success in life. And the second one is this: our behavior will always be linked by how we keep score. Our behavior will always be linked by how we keep score. Let me ask you this question. How are you keeping score in life? How are you keeping score? Because it will determine what you deem as success. If success is big business, big house, big cars, you know, whatever, then your behavior will always be the reciprocal of that. That will be the mirror image. You will work to attain that. That's the direction you will go, and then you will determine at the end of your life if you achieve that or not. So how do you determine success? What is success for you? There's three things that I think that we usually go through, and I was reading a book by John Ortberg. If you've ever read any John Ortberg books, I would encourage you to read John Ortberg. He's great at boiling it down and making a point, and he came up with these three areas that I kind of wanted to share with you because I think he's on to something. He says, you know, there's three different areas that we kind of work in for success, and this is the three areas. And he said, it's always in comparison, and here's the three areas of comparison. The first one is upward. We compare ourselves up. Who has something better than us? You know, if we have Xbox, somebody else has Xbox 360, right? Oh, man, they came out with a new one, right? Someone else has a Wii, all right? Okay, that's the big rage for kids, I know. You know, everybody's got to have a Wii. It's even for adults. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but nursing homes are having bowling leagues with Wiis. Do you know this? Okay, it's true. It's absolutely true. And so they take their little Wii and they do their bowling league. I'm not kidding you, all right? So you've got the Wii, but then you've got houses and cars and boats and all these other things, and we begin to compare ourselves upwards, and here's what that usually leads to. That usually leads to envy, because we usually look at that person, we're like, man, I'm just as good as them. I'm just as smart as them. I'm just as talented as them. I work just as hard or harder than they do. How come I don't have that? I should have that. Have you ever noticed yourself at some point in time in your life, maybe even recently, that you drive up to an intersection and you're driving an okay car, okay, you know, and you look over and a Benz rolls up. And there's something sometimes within me that goes, I bet you they cheated somebody to get that. You ever felt that way? I have. Looking at somebody, I bet they didn't really work for that. They lucked into that. They were just at the right place at the right time, and the opportunity presented itself, and they got their business thing going. But here I am. This isn't working out. But if I would have been where they were, I would have three Mercedes-Benz, you know. You ever felt like that before? It's amazing how we get like that. We begin to become suspicious of somebody that has a little bit more stuff than what we've got. And you know something? The truth is, they may have worked and saved like you would not believe. But there's something within our heart that says, that should be mine. I work just as hard as they do. People just don't appreciate me as much. If people recognize me more, I would be where they were. Here's the second type of comparison. It's lateral. It's right across. In other words, these people are about the same status. Maybe it's a coworker, okay? Same age, same lifestyle. There's a good and bad in that, in the lateral. It can be competition, and competition's not always bad, is it? Competition can be good. Competition can make you better, but competition can sometimes carry it with this thing of that person is an obstacle, and I've got to beat them to the punch. And not just beat them to the punch, I need to run them over. See, that's the danger. Competition's not bad. Like today, there's going to be a bunch of football games played. Competition's not bad. I used to talk with football teams, and I would tell them, you know, guys, your job today is to put the other guy on his can. And there would just be these shocked looks. You know, what did he just say? And I would say to them, Jesus would be very disappointed if you did not tackle the other guy. They'd never thought about that before. It was like, well, I leave Jesus on the sideline. I don't take him out there with you. I was like, you need to take him out there with you. Where you cross the line is when you're trying to hurt somebody. See, there's the line. Competition's not bad, but the line is when you're trying to injure, when you're trying to take somebody down, to put them out, that you see them not as a person anymore, but as an obstacle. You make them into an inanimate object versus someone who was created in God's image. That's when you begin to go the wrong way laterally. Last one is this, is downward. Downward. This is when you got some stuff, same scenario, pull up to the same stoplight as what you did the previous day and you saw the person in the Benz. This person pulls up in a 1972 brown Pinto. And you're just like, if these people would just get out and work. You ever thought that? I have. I'm guilty. If that person would just get out there and do something with themselves. And then they start to go and you hear, oil pours out, you know, smoke, and you're like, you know, oh, these people are now, and they're even polluting their environment. Not only are they lazy, they're polluting the environments. Now it's all in my lungs. You begin to look downward, and you begin to look down at your nose at them, and you begin to devalue them as a human being. Isn't it amazing? That's how we keep score in life. It's what we do. All of our magazines point to it. What does Forbes always list? The richest people in the world, right? Okay, we can always read on there how much that they have, where they live, who they are, how they got their start. And when you look at all those magazines, like Time will list what? The most popular people, all right? This person is the most popular person. Everybody knows who this person is. People magazine this last week, sexiest man alive. Did you girls get the double issue? All right. Who was it, ladies? Do you know who it was? I know you're thinking, well, I came in a close second, but it wasn't me. All right. Who was it? Matt Damon. That's right. Okay. Which I'm pretty close there. See, that's a lateral comparison if you're wondering. Okay. That's the way I see him, lateral right there. He's not up, not down. He's lateral. Okay. I know you're going, whatever. But you know, so we've got all these lists because that's what we do. This is how we keep score. If you can make the people list, or you can make the Forbes list, or you want to make the Time list. I know one of the things that's amazed me is when I was younger, I would look at all these football players and popular people, and I'd be like, oh, wow, they're 25 to 35, you know, in that range. Wow, you know. Oh, when I get there, I'll be doing some of the things that they're doing. And now then, you kind of get on that upper side and you hear that the starting quarterback of the Browns is 25 years old and you go, man, I'm 30, you know, I can't believe this, but I could still play, you know what I'm saying? I could run 50 yards maybe, you know, and then get an oxygen tank, finish out the other 50, you know, I'll be all right. And you know, the thing is, we know how to keep score, but then the problem is, if we set up that the score is going to be like that in life, you get to that 30s range and suddenly younger people are getting a bigger promotion than what you are. Uh-oh, now what are you going to do? Somebody else is passing you up, and you always looked up to people who were older than you, who were getting up the success ladder, but now then you're kind of doing pretty well, and all of a sudden you start seeing these young little whippersnappers, all right? They're coming up in the ranks, and you're like, wait, they're past me. Wait, this can't be right. If that's the way that you value success, then you're going to be extremely disappointed. Do you know how God values success? Do you know his definition of success? He actually gave two different definitions. Two different definitions. I know a lot of people approach religion and Christianity and they say, I don't know about that whole Christian thing because there's a lot of rules and regulations and stuff like that. What you'll find out is that the rules and regulations are about one word, and that word is relationships. The rules, if you want to call them that, are about relationships. I know this much. You're going to be screaming like crazy today if your team is out on the field and some receiver doesn't get his second foot in by that much. You're going to be in front of your HDTV pointing out to the official how he was out of bounds and they need to challenge that call, aren't you? But boy, come to life and we're like, no, God doesn't need to be about rules, you know? But boy, let the other team do something wrong and you're going to let them have it. That's a rule, right? It's the way we handle life as far as games are concerned, as far as our team. But as far as us, no, then we know that no, God doesn't need to have an inbounds and out of bounds. Come on. Here's the way God keeps score. They came to Jesus and they said, Master, what's the most important commandment? Okay, what's the most important rule? Let's just use that word. Listen to his response. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And he said, the second is just like it. In other words, it's right there with it. Love your neighbor as yourself. He said, these are the two and greatest, and all the commandments, or if you want to say, all of the rules hang upon these two. In other words, these are the ones, everything else comes off of that. You know what Jesus was saying? It's about relationships. Your relationship to God and your relationship to people. Jesus was pointing out to his audience, the way that you can tell how someone's relationship with God is going is to check out how they do relationally with other people. Now, he's not saying that you won't have difficult times. Jesus had them. You know that. The Pharisees, religious rulers of the day, would give him what for, and I mean, he wouldn't put up with it. He had run-ins with people. But Jesus always made sure that those who were being taken advantage of, he took up for. Jesus always made sure that he treated people fairly. Jesus always made sure that even though that they were rude, that he never got rude back. That's not the way he dealt with people. Because he knew the way that he dealt with people ultimately is going to show the way that he deals with God. And it really does. If you're an unforgiving person towards people, eventually you'll be an unforgiving person towards God. They say, well, how does that work? Let a tragedy come into your life out of nowhere, not like your 98-year-old grandma that's in the hospital dying. Okay, that's kind of an expected thing. I'm talking about like a friend, a brother, a sister, a mom or a dad suddenly gone. A close friend, suddenly something happens. If you've been an unforgiving person towards people, you're going to suddenly turn it on God and you're going to say it's all God. And you're going to be unforgiving. And you're going to be mean towards God. Blame him. It's your fault. You could have stopped it. Guess what? In your earth relationships, you probably do the same thing. It's the way it works. Why? Because Jesus said so. He knew how humanity would be. That's why he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. That's with everything that you've got. That's not, well, I feel like I'm being loving towards God, or I like him. No, no, no. Love the Lord your God, and Jesus tells you how, with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. It's where your energy lies. It's why you do business. You work hard at business, because that is what would please the Lord. You work hard at family because that's what would please God. I've seen Christians before, and I don't know why where they get this, why they do it. They think that following after God means that we really don't work as hard, that we just do all family stuff. And I'm like, no. He gave you a family, and he gave you work. Check out Genesis. Before the woman came along, God told Adam, take care of the ground. Work. Then he gave family. Now that doesn't mean, oh, that means work comes first, family comes second. No, no, no. God made it very clear as to what happens. But you work to provide for the family. Family should be the priority, but you can't just say, oh, well, I'll just be flippant and I'll just do whatever and I don't really have to take care of my family because, quote, God will take care of me. No, you're to work hard. You're to work as what is pleasing to the Lord. That's what Scripture tells us to do. If we approach life with success being how many things we can get, and this is what Jesus was pointing out to this guy, if this is what your definition of success is, you're going to be painfully mistaken. you're going to be painfully wrong because there's always going to be more that you can do. But when you give over business, when you give over job, when you give over all of those extra things, and they're important, when you give over all of those things to God and you work as to Him, you leave it in His hands, whether He blesses you in business, whether He doesn't bless you in business, and that you work as to the Lord, He's going to take care of you. Say, how do you know that? Listen to verse 22 and 23. This is right after the story. Then very next verse says, then turning to his disciples, Jesus said, so I tell you, don't worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food to eat or clothes to wear, for life consists of far more than food and clothing. When you begin to live for the kingdom of God, He begins to take care of all the other stuff. It doesn't mean that you're just going to be able to sit back and do nothing. He's going to work with you. But you're not going to have to be in the worry mode. That's what God removes from you, not work, like what some people would like to think. I can just sit around, God will provide for me. No. It's not what He said. But you work with God, and He begins to take the worries away. You give it to Him to bless. We sang the song, You Give and Take Away. It's straight from the book of Job, where Job had everything and lost everything. And he said, you give and take away. And in the very next verse is the most important verse. He says, blessed be the name of the Lord. Can you say that this morning? That's a hard thing. Sometimes I can't say it. I'll be real honest. Sometimes life deals some hard situations and some curveballs that, man, you can swing at all day long and you'll never hit. Never even get close to nicking it. But if your definition of success is how much things or status or popularity or whatever it is, you're going to be sadly mistaken at the end of your life because you do leave it all. You do leave it all. I've heard people before say, well, is it a sin to have things? No, it's not a sin to have things. Jesus told the rich several times, he said, hey, use your wealth to further the kingdom, be hospitable, help people out. You know, he said, I've given it to you to do that. I didn't give it to you so you feel bad about it or embarrassed about it. No. And see, that's where we really mess up because we get into that whole competitive mode. If somebody's got more, they didn't do anything to get there or they cheated somebody. Okay? If they're somewhere around our level, we want to do that lateral comparison. And if we think they're below us, we look down our noses at them. And that's not the way Jesus measures things. At the end of your life, whatever time and day that that may be, my prayer is for you, and I know what Jesus' will and what He's trying to get at is this, that you will be rich, as He says, in relationships, not just with God, but also with people. That's the goal. And see, that changes your entire behavior. Because what I've found out is the things that really get us messed up are probably a, you know, kind of a top five, top four or five, envy. That one trips us up, being unforgiving. You know, that one kind of trips us up, seeing other people as obstacles. Or what about this, being just apathetic towards someone, you just don't even care about them. Those are the things that Christ would say to us, be rich in your relationship with God and your relationship with people. And understand this, not everybody is going to think you're great. Not everybody will. Not everybody thought Jesus was great, okay? He was perfect, all right? You're not there. You may think you're going to get there. Just get married, okay? Your spouse will point out to you where you're not, or you're not quite so perfect, okay? And you know something? When you have that right relationship with God, it bleeds over to that right relationship with other people. And you become a person that people genuinely like to be around. Not everybody will like you, but they will respect you. They will respect you. What's your measurement of success? What's your end game? Where does it end for you? What's the number or what's the status that you say this is it? And if it's, well, I want to retire by the time I'm 60, I want to go to Florida, you know, you may achieve those things. That'd be great. But if that's it, don't you want something a little bit more to show for it in life? A rich relationship with God, a rich relationship with people. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. Lord, for all of us in this room, I think we can all confess that we keep score. You know, how am I doing against somebody else? How's my production in my area at my work or my business? But Lord, when it comes to relationships, that's the hardest thing to measure. There's no way to just sit down a sheet of paper and say, I did this and this and this, and therefore my relationships are at 100%. Lord, it is just so subjective that it's easy for us to just kind of go to work and be able to show our spreadsheet and to know whether we're doing well or whether we're not. Father, I pray that you will remind us that our relationship with you and our relationship with others pays much bigger dividends back. Lord, remind us that it's not wrong to have stuff. It's the attitude of our heart with the stuff. And Father, you're the one that knows all hearts, just like this man that shouted out, you know, tell my brother to give me one half. And Lord, that sounds fair to us. We would think that somebody would just say, yeah, that's right. It's the way it should be. And you just got right to the heart of the matter. So Lord, help us that as we begin to measure success, that we would realize that our success needs to be based upon relationships with you, with family, with other people, coworkers, whoever it might be, that we would become rich in relationships. Lord, I just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. If you're new with us, I just want to encourage you, fill out one of those connection cards and put it in the popcorn box. If you're one of our regular attenders and you have your offering this morning, you can place that in there. But most importantly, my prayer for you is that you would become in that rich relationship with God, that rich relationship with other people. There's going to be some good days, some bad days. But evaluate this morning. Get to the heart of the matter. What's the definition? What's the end game? Where's the point at which you say, this is what will make me happy? And if you get it, where does it put you?